You're on a GLP-1. Your appetite is changing, your cravings quiet down, and food noise is finally fading. But now you're wondering, how do I manage my side effects? What do I eat to stay strong? How do I break through a plateau? Because reaching your weight loss goals can take more than meds. That's where Weight Watchers Med Plus comes in. The support designed to help you navigate what comes next. With trusted experts who guide you, food plans that work with your body, support to help manage side effects, plus access to GLP-1 medication. Weight Watchers Med Plus is designed to help you lose more weight. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com. All medical services are provided through our affiliated medical group, Weight Watchers Clinic. Medications require eligibility and prescription. Individual results may vary. See site for more details.
Welcome in, Planeteers, to Sun's Planet, where we had ourselves a little week. And actually, Bruce, let me just right off the top just say, I got it right, 3-1. As we kind of talked about backstage, the game last night leaving a little bit of a bad taste in Suns fans' mouths with the way it finished. We'll get into it, but and I'll let folks know now before they start asking in the chat, but they will as well. Yes, Kevin is fine, but he's unable to make the show today. He let us know late last night that he had something come up, unfortunately, so he wasn't going to be able to join the show. And we do have exciting news for next week's show. It's going to be a little different time. I'll give you guys a little bit more information on that at the end of the show. But first, the Boston Bruiser. Let's go with that name.
Yeah.
All the way from Boston, Bruce Velez. Tell us a little bit about what's going on. How you been?
I'm doing good. It was a good week. I know you said you were right. I was kind of close, 2-2. It was kind of tough in my predictions. Yes.
With only you're always going to be kind of close when there's
Yeah. But I mean, for the Suns this week, overall, I did think that it was a good week. I mean, they started off at home against the Hornets, which we'll get into a little bit. But for this road trip, they have a very important one coming up, especially with how close the Western Conference is. I think the Suns are like only like 3 games back from like the 3rd seed at this point. Mm-hmm. So it is very, very close from the 3 seed all the way down to the 8 seed. And then even with the 9 and 10 seed, the Warriors and the Blazers. I know the Warriors don't have Curry right now, but either of them could maybe make a little bit of a run in that play-in. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this really unfolds. And for the Suns, they obviously have a really tough second part of this road trip coming up. But I do think that going into that second half of the road trip, it's going to be very, very fun and very interesting for the Suns team to use the things that they've learned from earlier in the season to kind of combat against some of these teams because they've played all these clubs before.
Mm-hmm. It has been a little bit of a, I don't want to say easy schedule. We obviously had some tough games this week. But if you go back to start off March, the Kings, the Bulls, the Pelicans, this week we played the Hornets, the Bucks, the Pacers, who are the worst team in the league right now, and the Raptors. And now on the second leg of this road trip, we have 3 games away, starting in Boston. And then we will fly out from Boston to Minneapolis to face the Timberwolves. And 2 days after that, fly into San Antonio to play the Spurs. If that's not a buzzsaw of, hey, we were kind of enjoying ourselves. We were, you know, resting up, getting our injured guys back. And good thing we got some of them back because this is going to be a tough little stretch here. It looks like we'll be at home for a little bit after that. But let's start off with the 111 to 99 win over the Charlotte Hornets, the surprising Charlotte Hornets, the team that kind of were their normal selves earlier in the year and have really put some nice runs together, nice streaks together, and put together a competent team around Miller, Bridges, Ball, and I just say the K-man because I know he can shoot, and I have a hard time saying his last name. Can you help me out again?
It's Con Knipple.
Knipple. All right. There we go. So if you think you're saying it kind of dirty, you are, and that's all right because that's how he goes. But, yes, no, that guy, I mean, he's on a lot of people's rookie of the year, top rookies kind of to watch. And it's interesting. Just I like this for the Charlotte Hornets, you know, and not just because we always trade and take their backup centers from them, but just because, you know, I like to see some – I believe you called them poverty franchises. I like to see some poverty franchises occasionally turn it around. And the Hornets used to, you know, you go back, I don't know, the 90s were interesting. They had the coolest starter jacket. You probably have seen people wearing that at one point, Bruce, and you're like, yep. Why would anyone wear a Hornets jacket? They used to be cool.
Mm-hmm. I was originally about to say that. I remember like hearing stories of how cool like the team was when they came in. Like they were like the team that everyone kind of like bandwagoned, I guess, just because mm-hmm. their colors and their logo was in that 90s era was like, cool. And I don't blame them. I mean, the purple and the teal is very nice. And then even when when they were the New Orleans Hornets, I even like their jerseys too, like with the yellow and stuff. I have a Chris Paul, like the yellow and teal jersey. That one's really cool. Like when they went to Oklahoma that one year, when they had the tornado, they had like the red jersey. I don't know if you remember that, but that's like a rare jersey. But yeah, no, the Hornets in this game, very, very interesting. And like you mentioned, Jake, I've liked their little turnaround this season. They've had Charles Lee. I don't know if you know him. He's their head coach. He used to be on Joe Mazzulla's staff when they won the championship in 2023. So a little bit of a bias there for me, but I've always liked what he can be able to do to kind of instill a culture, because kind of with those poverty franchises that I mentioned last week in Sacramento and New Orleans, is they don't really have that, right? They don't have that identity, that culture, similar to what Phoenix didn't really have these last couple of seasons. But now they have that, and you look at teams like the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Boston Celtics, the Indiana Pacers, the Phoenix Suns, right? The San Antonio Spurs. All of these teams have an identity. All of them have a culture of playing hard, being aggressive, working on both ends, never giving up, fighting for loose balls. And look where it's putting them right now. Maybe not the best for the Pacers this season because of the injuries, but you look at every other team, they're all competitive. They all fight. And that's what the Charlotte Hornets are, I think, trying to get into in these next couple of seasons, which is going to be very interesting. Like you mentioned, Con Knipple, he's very fun to watch this season. Could be Rookie of the Year for them. They also have Michigan State best and someone that I said to keep an eye on the trade market for the Suns this year, and Miles Bridges, because who knows when the Suns are going to trade for a Michigan State player, but I have a feeling with Matt Ishbia at one point it's going to happen. And they also have another Michigan State player in Xavier Tillman. Don't believe he got any action in this game. No, he did not. But Grant Williams, former Boston Celtics, did have three threes, 10 points, and was playing some very solid defense. LaMelo had 22 for them. So they were keeping it in this game. And like you mentioned, their offense has been really solid this season to keep them afloat. But for the Suns, Booker, 30, Jalen Green, 24. I mean, not really a great shooting night from them, too. 5 for 16 combined from three, but Colin Gillespie and Rashear Fleming going 9 for 16 from three and combining for 40 points as well is definitely going to help you out. And for this week, Rashear Fleming, man, he really showed himself out. And I tweeted this out yesterday, but I think we could talk about it with this game, too. I truly think that he has showed himself to be someone that when this team is fully healthy, he wants to be competing in this rotation. And I think he wants to insert himself in there.
Yeah, I think we have it's interesting. I know Michael P will love hearing this. I think one of the rookies has officially taken a half step above one of the – I'm going to call him a vet because he's been here for a year. But Ryan Dunn's minutes, they're not zero, but they are on life support. And so I think they don't want to totally break him. I mean, a first-round pick a year ago, you want to keep him, you know, in the rotation a little bit and keep giving him opportunities. But at this point, I think Fleming's floor has surpassed Ryan Dunn's floor. And so you're going to get a little bit more from him each night, which is great to see that kind of internal development. Let me ask you something real quick, Bruce, to get your take on. You mentioned culture, and we talked a little bit about, you know, some of these historically bad franchises. Heck, I actually earlier this week I was looking up. Remember the Charlotte Bobcats? And yeah, you remember who their first draft pick was?
Okay, so this would be 2004, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't know who their first round, who their first pick ever was, but I do remember like Gerald Wallace and like a Mecca Okafor being on their team. So I would guess Okafor, just because I think that what's his name? Wallace was played with the Celtics beforehand, but I might be wrong.
That's how I understood it. Yes, it was Okafor was their first pick. Wow. And talk about an interesting guy, rookie of the year. And I feel like you just did not hear about him after that. He didn't really, I was like, what happened to him? And I found out that one, he took like a couple of years off at some point or a year off and then tried to make a little comeback. And I think that was like 5 years ago or maybe like 2019, I guess. So 7 years ago, but his stint in the NBA was what, not, you know, it wasn't totally empty, but I think he played into 31, 32. And it feels like today, like nowadays, like, oh, you know, he's a player's only 32 years old, still young. You know, when you look at LeBron, it's like, oh, he's got another decade to go. Okay. But yeah, Okafor, you know, just a traditional low post defensive center that never really had a big offensive game to him, I don't think. But just kind of an interesting little nugget there. I was kind of like, wait, whatever happened to that guy? I remember he was like a stud in college, and then yeah, he went to the Charlotte Bobcats, which were a thing for a moment until they returned to the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, the Bobcats. I just vividly remember them from one of the memories I have of them is obviously their worst season, because I was like in elementary school, and this is back in the day where. I used to watch Sports Center every day, right? Mm-hmm. So like I'd like watch Sports Center top 10 or whatever, and I just remember rest in peace Stuart Scott always talking about the Charlotte Bobcats on Sports Center with Scott Van Pelt in the morning, and little me just being like, how could a team be this bad? And then I saw like the Nets with Deron Williams that one year that were really bad too, and I was like, how can this team be this bad? Like 10-year-old me never understood the concept of tanking. I was just like, why are these teams like not try? Like, why just can't this team win?
Any given night, you can win. Exactly. You just gotta try.
Exactly. I'm like, why? I didn't understand that concept yet. And I was just so confused. I was like, how could a team have like 6 or 8 wins? Like, that's just embarrassing.
Oh, yeah. No, they had some horrific, horrific runs. Momentarily kind of like the Vancouver Grizzlies. That's a fun, if you ever there YouTube, there's a great video for like a, I think it's like a, I'd call it like a little mini doc. It's about an hour long, I think. And it was like the history of the Vancouver Grizzlies and how like the financials were always kind of tricky up there, and they were having a hard time and, filling the seats. And eventually, the city kind of didn't want to continue to support it. There was also a rule, and it'll be interesting. The reason why I bring this up, don't worry, it is all kind of Suns related, but is how they forced the expansion teams they couldn't jump to the top spots in the draft right out of the gate. And so because of that, you had these teams that you had, like when they finally got somebody in the draft was his name? Glenn Reeves, big country, Glenn Reeves. And I mean, they'd go out and they'd win 17 games a year and they'd lose everything else. I mean, it was a tough franchise to be a part of. They would get these like mid-tier stars, you know, role players elsewhere, but you know, they had to be a star for them, and they just couldn't get out of their own way. And they had a hard time getting to those initial early draft picks. And then when the few times that they did, big country, Glenn Reeves was just not going to turn that franchise around by himself. So especially when the Raptors got Vince Carter and you're trying to sell people on big country. But soon we're going to have an expansion draft again. It sounds like it could actually be next year.
Really? I mean, I'm thinking that I haven't heard much on it. All I've heard is that they've like meted. Adam Silver's met with the teams that are interested. My whole kind of thing was, I know that Fenway Sports Group, who is in charge of the Red Sox, wants to have an NBA team. They've been wanting to. They were rumored to be interested in the Celtics before Bill Chisholm bought them. And I think that they want to get the Vegas team. It's been rumored that they want the Vegas team. And LeBron said he wants to run the Vegas team. And LeBron has a stake in Fenway Sports Group. They sold the Penguins a couple months ago and stuff. So I do think that they might wait for LeBron to retire. That's kind of my hypothesis, is that LeBron wants to own the team, like similar like MJ, but they won't let him do it while he's in the league. So he's going to have to retire and then he can do it. So I think they're waiting on that. But I mean, to be honest, if it happens this summer, I'd be more than ready for it, because I've been saying for two or three seasons now that the league's need an expansion draft. So if it gets jump started out of nowhere, I'm all for it, because that would make me happy, because I think it's definitely necessary.
I guess I could totally see the process getting started next year with the expansion. For the next season.
Yeah, that would be great.
But that'll be interesting, especially as we've talked about a lot on this podcast this year with the Sun salary cap situation, because you can only protect, at least traditionally, eight players on your team from being poached. And if there's going to be two teams coming in, they have to fill their rosters with players. And it'll be interesting to see who the Suns would protect. I'm going to guess like a Ryan Dunn type player would all of a sudden become available. It would be those types of players that Las Vegas, I'll call them the Las Vegas Gamblers until they have an actual team name, and the Seattle Sunshine. Kind of need to fill their roster somehow, and they have to do it with contracts that are already out there. So that will be interesting, because that also takes money off of your team's books because these players basically just get acquired. So sorry, obviously we spent the first 15 minutes really kind of just briefing over the Suns win over the Hornets, but Hornets, hey, they were the Bobcats at one point, an expansion team. The other quick question I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned it, is culture and the culture that's being brought to the Hornets to make them more competitive. Do you think that the culture is I'm sure there's different cases, but what do you think is more traditional in terms of franchise improvement? Good players or culture in terms of coming on first? Is it like this is Heat culture and we can plug in players as we go? Or is it more like, hey, we finally have enough good players that now we can establish a culture? What do you think?
I think it's more culture over players. I think you kind of have to set that environment and set that tone from the get-go. Because I think when the players kind of come into that, they kind of have to see that experience. And I'll give an example, like with the Celtics, obviously I've been a huge fan of them ever since I was a kid. And we all know like that culture, that identity of like working hard and winning is not only instilled in like the New England kind of like area, because that they're all like kind of like blue collar workers, a majority of them, and they all kind of are hard workers, but also just like in the teams as well, right? And for the Celtics, like growing up as a kid, like I know like players are going to die for the ball, loose balls on the ground. They're going to throw their body out there. They're going to come in and try to chase down block. If they're up 10 or down 10, they're going to be continuing to fight to the last whistle, right? And I think that's very important, because you could have teams that just have good players, but they don't mess with the coach, right? Like you could look at like the Nets with like Steve Nash, for example, where they handpicked that team, but then after they handpicked that team, they're like, all right, this team isn't working. We need to get James Harden. We need to get Steve Nash out of here. Like, if you give the player, I think, too much control, I think it makes it a little bit worse. And I think with the culture kind of being set first, it kind of can get everyone top to bottom very institutionalized. The one thing that I really like with the Suns, and we've talked about this before, is that from top to bottom, they are all on the same page, from Matt Ishbia to Brian Gregory to Jordan Ott. And that's because obviously Matt Ishbia hired these guys. He handpicked these guys. And similar to like with the Celtics with Joe Mazzulla, like the first year he came in 2022, when Ime was jostled out of there, he didn't really have like his own handpicking of things. The next year he got to handpick his coaching staff. He picked Sam Cassell, he picked Charles Lee, and then they won the championship. And then Charles Lee gets a head coaching job, and Sam Cassell has been in the running for multiple head coaching jobs, including the Suns one this season. So I do think kind of instilling that culture is a lot more important than getting those players, because I think even with a culture, you can kind of change the atmosphere, especially with another example, the Pacers from last year. I think not a lot of people thought, even including myself, that they could be a championship team. Meanwhile, one game winning away from beating the Thunder. I had no thought of that. With all their underdogs and all their underrated players and their culture and their fast pace of play, they were able to match the Thunder. So I think it has to be culture for me.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the one thing I would say is that I think it's easy to kind of dismiss some culture attempts, I'll say, in the sense that the good players will remain employed because they're good players. Whereas Coach Vogel, hey, championship winning coach, come and establish an identity. Gone in 1 year. Coach Bud, teach us how to play random. You are a championship coach. Gone because nobody wanted to listen to him. So I think winning cultures, if they're bought into, then it really elevates everybody. But if players are tuning you out early, or like with Monty Williams to a degree, they were tuning him out maybe towards the end of his run, that at that point it becomes okay, we need something different. But the players will still remain. So I think you're right. I think the culture is kind of that X factor, but it's hard to maintain. There's only a few franchises that have like marketed it like Heat culture, or like this is how the Celtics play. This is the Celtics way of doing things. The green and white, the Lakers, Lakerland. Like you don't hear like this is how we play Sacramento Kings basketball. Like, you don't hear that ever. So I think it's interesting. Yeah. And it's good for the Hornets. It's good for the league to have that. Some other things we're going to talk a little bit about this week is the continued development and playing time of some of the Suns rookies that continued from last week. Milowatch Fleming, as you mentioned, getting some play. Let's go ahead and transition to the Suns against the Bucks, where the Suns 129 to 114 over the Milwaukee Bucks. And Devin Booker, 27 points, 7 assists. Jalen Green backing him up, 25 points on 10 of 20 shooting with 5 assists as well. Giannis, they were playing him hard, 32 minutes. He got 22 points. It was actually, though, Kyle Kuzma trying to drag them to a win. He was not able to do it, thankfully, and the Suns were able to run him off the court kind of in that fourth quarter. It was a 29-17 finish in that fourth quarter. But, this was – I don't want to say a trap game, kind of a trap game. Like the Bucks are not great. They're not good, but they're not awful. They're not the Pacers. What do you think about this win over the Bucks?
It was a little bit of a weird one. Kyle Kuzma and Miles Turner, I will say, had the term magnet ball in this game, because it was just absolutely insane how many times they just shot it and the ball just seemingly just went in. I mean, Kuzma's 60% from 3-point range. I'll be honest, man. Like, shout out to my boy Finn Keel. I've talked about him on the podcast before. I did the article with him on Booyah. He's a huge Bucks fan and stuff like that. And I was looking at his tweets during the game and seeing his tweets all season long. He has been very, very bipolar with Kyle Kuzma for obvious reasons. And even though Kuzma is a great veteran, he realizes he has his weaknesses. And this was just a crazy game from Kuzma hitting his shots. Miles Turner, same thing. Giannis finding his way inside. I will say that over this stretch of games, from watching them, especially going against the Bucks and going against the Raptors, some physical teams with some big men and teams that don't really shoot the three and aren't great at three, the Suns have a glaring problem at defending the paint points, because Milwaukee, even Indiana and Toronto were very dominant in that regard as well. They outscored the Suns here 38-34, a little bit closer, but maybe it just felt like the Bucks were just dominating in the paint. But I mean, the Suns also with Jalen Green were also finding some easy baskets as well. He a little bit of a not efficient game comparative to the other two, but still another great game, 25 points. Royce O'Neal, this was his big ticket game where he had 7 3-pointers, the most he's had this season. I believe this was a career high, or not career high, excuse me, 21
in the first half, did he?
I don't think so. I believe he had five. I think he had 5 in the third quarter too, which was absolutely insane. I believe that was a record or tied a record for him. I can do the research on that real quick, but he played great. Devin Booker had a good week. Even Grayson Allen, who I believe was kind of getting back into this rotation, kind of to find himself after dealing with some injuries and stuff. He looked really good. And then, like you mentioned, Jake, once again, a little bit of a quieter game for Milowatch and Fleming here, but still, nonetheless, very impressive. Milowatch got to play against Giannis Antetokounmpo, got to play against Miles Turner. These are great, great reps for him to develop in this front court. And I think it's just funny, once again, that people like wrote off Kaman Milowatch so early on, like before he even touched the floor. Like they were judging off his Valley Suns tape. Like it's just absolutely insane, because I don't want any of those people near a scouting department ever in my life. It's just funny.
I'm a little torn on Milowatch, if only just because I still haven't seen, I've seen some of the flashes, but I've seen that with other Suns bigs before. I've seen that with a DeAndre Ayton. I've seen it with an Alex Len. I've seen it with,
Marquise
Dragon Bender, Marquise Chris. I've seen it with, just the attempts of, Robin Lopez, if you want to go back further. You know, we spend a first-round pick, and basically what all that history has taught me is that bigger guys usually take a little bit longer to season. Because the game, the pace of the game is so fast usually that the bigger guys have a little harder time, because maybe they were just able to use their dominating size and power in the college level or international level, that it changes things a little bit. So I'm not down on him, but it is interesting. I'd be curious, is Milowatch probably, he's probably, I would guess, the rookie that's playing the least amount of minutes of any rookie drafted in the top 10. Would you think that that's probably accurate?
Let me look it up real quick, and then I can tell you. I could tell you for 100%, because I know that, because one of the rookies, Noah Asenge on the Bulls, got hurt. He's out for the season, so I know that he didn't really play that much, but I believe the Bulls were the pick after the Suns, if I'm not mistaken. Cooper's played, Harper's played, Edgecombe's played, Khan's played. I mean, Bailey has come off the bench. Trey Johnson's played. Fears has come off the bench. Jemin has played more, but he just got hurt. And then Morey Burley. Yeah, they've all played. Yeah, Asenge was 12, excuse me. But and then in the top 15, once again, less because Sorber is out for the year. But, like, Joan Berenjay for the Timberwolves, he's another big man center, kind of to be their Rudy Gobert replacement. He was picked 17th. He's gotten some minutes, but kind of similar to Milowatch, is kind of like been a loop since they have Rudy Gobert, Naz Reid, all those bigs. They don't really need him. He's just kind of insurance, so he hasn't really played. So there are some other bigs in this draft class that haven't played, but definitely in the top 10, he's the one that has the least amount.
No, and I'm going to reiterate, I'm not down on him. I don't think it was a wasted pick or a bust or anything like that. But it's hard for me to project, right? Like, next year, man, we're going to see some dominating Milowatch. It's kind of like, okay, it's kind of like, you send somebody off to go develop, and it's, he's getting a little bit of minutes now again, but, when the playoffs kick off, I don't expect him to touch the floor unless we have to break glass for some reason. I'm glad that he's getting a little bit of seasoning in, and he's playing better than I was fearing. I was fearing that he was going to look a little lost out there, and he looks pretty in control of the game. And he's, I think it was either you or Kevin were talking about some really nice screen and seals and getting just easy baskets in the paint that I love when a big man is just like, wait a minute, let me stand under the basket and you throw it to me and I will put the ball in the basket. Whereas like so much of the modern game's like, all right, then I'll run out and I'll take the corner three for you guys. It's like, no, not every time 7-footer that's 280 pounds do I need you to do that. Sometimes I need you to just push the little guy out of the way and make the easy layup. We can do that as well. But I just want to reiterate too that the this Bucks game, I mean, yeah, they were without Bobby Portis. I like Bobby, but they were playing, I mean, Kuzma 38 minutes, Turner, their big free agent acquisition, right, 32 minutes, Giannis got 32 minutes, Rollins, their starting point guard, played over 40, so playing to win the game, and this is not a tanking team, and playing Giannis heavy minutes after he was out, I think this was a quality win for us. So, yeah, you know, the Suns were only favored 2.5 points. Suns were minus 2.5, and we ended up winning by 15. Good win.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I definitely agree with your Malawach point as well. I definitely don't think I'm, like, completely off on him either. But I'm not, like, expecting him to be, like, the starting center next year or anything, right? Like, example. But as long as he continues to just continue to get better and we can see the growth through the years, I do think that they're in, like, the back of his mind, he knows he can be that dominating center. And I think he can unleash that once he picks up those intangibles and gets to that point.
Would you be disappointed if he never becomes the regular starter for the Suns?
I don't at all. Well,
Mark Williams has remained durable and how Oso has developed. I mean,
I wouldn't be like devastated. But I think in the back of my mind, I wrote about it for Brightside. I see him being more of like that replacement for Mark Williams. Like, I feel like Mark Williams is kind of that filler right now with Oso being the backup. And then they're just like, we need a good center, so we're going to have Mark Williams. But then in 2 to 3 seasons, if Malawach were to surpass him, then I think that they would be willing to move off of Mark and keep or Oso. Like, you know, or if they lose Oso, have Mark be the backup or whatever. You know what I mean? But like, I think they'd be willing to give Malawach that starting spot, because I think they drafted Malawach to be that center. And in one of the games this week, they were working on him and Devin Booker in the like PNR and passing and stuff like that, trying to get their touches up. So I think that's like their true vision for him, which I really, really like as well. Could you bring up this question for Michael P real quick? Or not question, but he talked about Brea a couple questions ago. I just wanted to touch about that because Brea was my favorite pick for the Suns this draft lottery, or not draft lottery, this draft, just because he went to Kentucky and I really liked his three-point shooting. I watched him a lot in college. And the one thing I will say for that is just because I think of the ascension of Colin Gillespie and Grayson Allen being on this team and Jordan Goodwin, it's just kind of limited his options, because I personally thought that Brea would have been converted by the end of the year. That was kind of one of my big predictions, was that Grayson would eventually be traded because they'd try to give him to a contender, because I didn't think the Suns were going to be this good. And then they'd give Brea an opportunity to try to crack the rotation and be an impactful guard to kind of show some things. I think with him still being on a two-way, that's good, though. They'll bring him back next year, either on that two-way or they'll bring him back on a regular deal, similar to what they did Colin, like a one-year kind of try it deal. And then I'm excited to see what they got in him. I mean, Brian Gregory said he's the best shooter in the draft class last year. He was not wrong about that. He's been playing pretty good for the Valley Suns. And just because he's not on the team this year, I still think they have a plan for him. And I think that can be very, very good. So I just wanted to touch on that because he hasn't really played.
Boom Room.
What's the name of that nightclub of yours again?
You talking about the Boom Boom Room?
Yeah, the Boom Boom Room. That's it. Funky.
No, we talk sometimes about what we do during that 30-second clip, and sometimes just grab another sip of coffee and kind of give our mouths a rest a little bit from talking. But I look down, and I have a blizzard warning today and a high wind warning. It was 55 yesterday, and it was 70 like 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's
we're supposed to be down to 10 tomorrow. So, one of the stranger winters we've had here in the Midwest. Like, I keep telling people and they're like, hey, you know, can you believe how cold it's getting? And yes, it's March. It's still supposed to be cold here in Iowa. It's usually dark and gray and snow on the ground until like late March. And then you start to see spring weather really hit in early April, maybe. This has been strange to have like, it's 72 and people are outside in t-shirt and shorts, looking like they're getting ready to go get tanned. And then they're like, can you believe it's cold now? Wow. And down in Arizona, they're looking at the hundreds already.
Yeah, lucky them. I was going to say the same thing's happening to me too. The other day I went out and it was like 70 and I was like, whoa. And then it was like 50 the other day. And I went out with my friend and like, We went and got drinks, and when we left, it was like 9:30. It was like 9:30, 10 o'clock, and we were like, wow, it's still nice out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this doesn't happen. We were talking about how we could see the grass now.
For how to dress us. Say that as you're sweating one moment, and then you're like, hey, you think we could go home and pick up our jackets?
Exactly. And then legit, I had like my coat in the back of my car because I'm like, I just, maybe just in case, but nope, didn't need it. And then the next day, yesterday, I went out and it's cold. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. And today, once again, similar to you, it's 43, windy. But for my week, it's tomorrow 45, Sunday 42. Then guess what? Monday and Tuesday, 62 and 61. We're right back into the 60s. And then the next day, high of 37. Like, how does it go from 61 to a high of 37 the next day? I don't know. And then we have potential some snow next Sunday. So, you know, March 22nd and still getting snow on the ground, potentially.
I like it. It's wacky. It's wild. It's keeps you checking those apps. I think that's what it is. I think the National Weather Service is like, we need more interaction in our apps. Let's change it up a little bit. And let's talk a little about, speaking of changing up, where the Suns took on the fierce 15-52 Indiana Pacers, who I got to give them credit. The Pacers, I think, have navigated. Well, let me run through it just real quick. Yes, we did win 123-108. Devin Booker, how about this? 43 points on 45% shooting, 57% from three-point range, joined with Jalen Green's 36 points on 61% shooting. Combined, they also had 9 assists, so they were moving the ball around pretty well too. This was just – I didn't want to get too excited because it was the Pacers. But this is like the amount of love and excitement I saw from Suns fans on social media. Like, did you see how much they combined for? That was phenomenal. They play so well together. Like Espo from PHNX, he's like, oh, you know, people were writing them off and look how well they're playing together. And I'm like, I remember when Bradley Beal went off against the Wizards too. And I wasn't like, oh, that's it. The big three are here. Like Bradley Beal had his arrival game finally. So, no, it was a great, great victory. It was a little closer than I would have guessed. I mean, 15 points is still a 15-point win. That's plenty of room. But the way the Pacers were playing, I would have guessed it was more. But it was very good. And, before I get into the Pacers, like, moving forward, I will just mention one of the things that I noticed. This is Zubac's first time in a Pacers uniform.
Yes,
so I was a little bit more nervous. Not that I was going to think that the Pacers were going to beat us all of a sudden, but, like, okay, you guys are going to play one of your best players. Siakam, though, did not play, so that really reduced what they could do. And Nebhard came back from injury and because he's had a sore back. And so Nebhard, who was going off in the first half, had like 23 points, I think, in the first half in 17 minutes. Zubac had 8 points and 6 rebounds in 16 minutes. You're hearing those minutes right because basically they came back and then they left the bench, two of their best players. The Pacers decided just not worth keeping those two guys out there, and that's when the Suns just – there was no way the Pacers were going to hang with us. So, Bruce, what are your takeaways?
Well, this was a very exciting game because this is the first time I got to cover two teams at the same
time. That's right. I forget you are the Pacers analyst now.
So that was very, very fun. My shout out to Holden Sherman from Bright Side of the Sun and also my friend Amy Castles, because they both texted me word for word, bar for bar, that it was the Bruce Bowl today, that day. And like both said it the same way. And I was just like, no way you guys both said that to me. That's actually hilarious. But yeah, it was the Bruce Bowl, I guess. And very, very entertaining Bruce Bowl, I will have to say, right? Like 79 points from Jalen Green and Devin Booker, like you mentioned. Also, Jalen Green had 4 steals in this game, which was very, very effective. I wish John had bet the over 1.5 steals on this game and I tailed it, because then maybe we would have won the bet, but it's okay. But what very, very good game from the Suns here. Even Royce O'Neal had 5 threes once again, kind of getting back into his rhythm and coming up big for this team. As well, those were kind of the major offensive showings. And then for the Pacers side of things, like you mentioned, Zubac had his first game for the Pacers. He looked really, really good. And I keep a lot of Pacers fans were very unhappy with the trade because they really liked Benedict Mathurin. And I personally really like Benedict Mathurin too. Obviously, I know a lot of maybe I don't know if some Suns fans do. I don't know if Suns fans are more ASU compared to Arizona, but he obviously was an Arizona Wildcat as well, so has some Phoenix ties there. But Zubac, I think, is going to be perfect for this Pacers team, and I think it was the right move to do this because he's just going to help them out so much, and he just makes so many beautiful passes. He could be a low post scorer, very good on defense, and I think him and Tyrese Haliburton, that pairing is going to be nice. He's going to open up a lot of shot opportunities. Like you mentioned, he was doing that with Nembhard early in the first half, but like you mentioned, the Pacers want to get the first overall pick because when they made the Zubac deal, they have it protected from picks 1 through 4 and then picks 10 through 14. So right now they are trying to be one of those top three teams in lottery odds. They can kind of secure themselves to at least keep their pick and not lose it to the Pacers giving up a lottery selection and bringing in Zubac. So they're like managing their injuries very well, I guess you could say. Even the Pacers didn't have TJ McConnell in this game. Jairus Walker was kind of questionable going in with an ankle injury, but he ended up playing. But their two-way guys did get some minutes. Jalen Slauson, Ethan Thomas, they both played pretty well and tried to keep it in. But for the Pacers, they're worried about losing, so they'll let guys drive by them and score, right? They'll let that happen. And when I was watching the
put their worst guys in and just play them relentlessly. Yeah. You're going to play 40 minutes tonight.
The King,
it's like, what, coach?
You should have had to watch the Kings Pacers game the other night. That was an amazing one over in the West Coast. A nice Sacramento Kings, like 10:30 start time with the Pacers and the Kings both rolling out nobodies. And but I believe Aaron Nesmith was their high scorer that game. And as you can see from
good, isn't he?
Yes, yeah, he is. And as you can see from the Suns Pacers game, Nesmith didn't play in that one.
Right.
The game before dropped like 20 and was really, really good, and then had a phantom injury. So it just goes to show you what the Pacers are doing right now.
I think the Pacers have manipulated this system perfectly. Manipulated sounds like evil intent. I think they did exactly what they needed to do as a team situated in Indiana would have to do to remain competitive. They were one game away from winning the NBA title against the Thunder, and their best player's Achilles snaps. Then they lose their center. Good center, I wouldn't say great, good. Miles Turner is a not quite an all-star level center, but he's a good center. And you see what you have with Nembhard. You have Mathurin, you have Nesmith. Pascal Siakam, things just don't come together. So you're looking at right now, you have the best odds to get the number one pick. You have Tyrese Haliburton most likely coming back completely healthy by next training camp. You'll have Zubac, who I think is one of the more underrated centers in the league. You will still have Pascal Siakam. You'll still have Nesmith. You'll still have TJ McConnell, Nembhard. This Pacers team, like, that's kind of, I mean, it's smart play. I mean, I can't be like disappointed with them. You know, it's, if you're a Pacers fan, maybe you're disappointed that the whole team had to basically take a sabbatical after, you know, the first month where they realized, hey, no, we can't put anything together that's going to be competitive enough. But I mean, I think you'd have to be excited that you still are going to have a lot of good pieces moving forward and a great shot at a great pick in a very deep draft. So, smart move by the Pacers. But yes, to me, the biggest thing that stood out to me in this game was Jalen Green's 36. Now, I know obviously Book and 43 is great, but you talked about it already with the Hornets and the Bucks game. Jalen Green, maybe he was listening to this podcast, Bruce, because Jalen Green, what have we been talking about? Dude, shoot better. Take smarter shots. Fire up and move past that hamstring, like, nervousness. We all knew it was going to take time, right? And this week, the numbers are through the roof. This is the Jalen Green everybody wanted offensively. And coming up with...
I absolutely love that first firing up of the grill on a warm summer evening. Do you or someone else in your home take grilling as seriously as I do? The Burger Perfection Pack is an incredible deal for just $99.99. This exclusive package includes 20 of Omaha Steaks' mouthwatering steak burgers. That's 4 of each of their finest burgers. Pure ground filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. Only available at omahasteaks.com. Impress your next dinner party or family cookout with exclusive products not available at grocery stores. all backed by Omaha Steaks 100% money-back guarantee. Get ready for grilling season with the mouth-watering Omaha Steaks Burger Perfection Pack, plus 8 free Wagyu Smash Burgers for just $99.99. Go to omahasteaks.com and as a bonus, use promo code YUM to get $35 off your order. That's $35 off with promo code YUM. Terms apply. See site for details.
You're on a GLP-1, but now you're wondering, how do I manage my side effects? What do I eat to stay strong? Because reaching your weight loss goals can take more than meds. That's where Weight Watchers Med Plus comes in. Get access to trusted experts, food plans that work with your body, and habit coaching to keep you on track. Plus access to GLP-1 medication. Get started at WeightWatchers.com. All medical services are provided through our affiliated medical group, Weight Watchers Clinic. Medications require eligibility and prescription. Individual results may vary. See site for more details.
15 more games to go. Now it's a perfect time to do it. So, yeah, what do you think of Jalen Green's weeks this week?
I mean, like you said, I think it was great. And a lot of people are going to make the knock that it was against like some weaker defensive teams, but he played very good against the Raptors yesterday. So I think that test can kind of take its rest. For me, I think it was just he needed to get more comfortable within this offense. And I think we've talked about that a lot, but I think the main thing that people thought was like, oh, just because he's been injured and he's coming in halfway through the season, he'll just be able to just fit right in. But that's just not going to happen, right? You look at all these guys that have played on this team, they all have to get some sort of communication, but also chemistry within the lineup, right? Like Amir Coffey, it took a couple games. Even Haywood Highsmith, his first game, he was pretty solid. He was just like a connector. But later on in the week, he was making some big shots, playing some good defense, using his link to make some disruptive plays. Like, it just takes a little while, even with Rashear Fleming and them. So, like, for Jalen Green, I think it was just that he had to take some time. And like you mentioned, we talked about it last week, kind of things he needed to do a little bit more. I mentioned driving to the basket a little bit more, working a little bit more off ball. Obviously, with Devin Booker in the lineup now, playing with Jalen Green, it makes it a lot easier because he's the de facto point guard. And if they're playing with Colin Gillespie and or Grayson Allen too, there's another option for another person to be a ball handler as well. So that can make it a little bit easier for Green. And the three-point shot has been feeling itself a little bit better too as well. I mean, in this game, he only shot 30% from three-point range, 3 for 9, but I think that's pretty solid for Jalen Green from what we've seen maybe from like those 1 of 8 nights where people are like really scratching their nails on like a chalkboard, really freaking out at that moment. But I do think that we have seen the progression of him kind of over these last couple of weeks. And I, like I said, I think it just needs to take some time, and I'm happy that it's coming together. I know a lot of people say Jalen Green has good marches, you know, this is kind of just a thing that's going to happen, but I just say let it play out because I think it's working very well. And then you bring in Dylan Brooks back into this team, Mark Williams back in this team. Like we mentioned, we haven't seen this team fully healthy besides what, like 2 quarters versus that Atlanta Hawks team. Like, we need to eventually see this team fully healthy. And once we do, I think that's when we'll be able to address what the real issues are. And maybe it is Jalen Green, but at this moment, I think he's been playing good.
Oh, I mean, great. You know, starting back with the Hornets game, 24 points, then 25 points, 36 points, and 34 points last night on 42%, 50%, 61%, 52%. He's averaging more than 10 three-pointers a game. His worst game from three was actually against the Pacers, where he was 3 of 9, 33%. That's actually solid for him. He's not an elite three-point shooter. The other nights, he did shoot 3 of 10, I guess the day before. That's a 30%. But a 50% last night, 8 of 16. He was also 4 of 10 against the Hornets. So, yes, keep going off, Mr. Jalen Green. This is why we were excited when we had, and this is why we were so patient after you played like one game and then had to set out for another month. So totally like that. And love seeing that development from Jalen Green. We did get a little question in the chat, and I believe it was during that Pacers game where the Suns combined for a very impressive showing with Booker and Green. But Bam Adebayo's 83 points. Michael P calls conspiracy theory. What do you think about the conspiracy theory? Or do you believe Voida's bestie, Ben Simmons, that hey, if you don't like him, just stop him, Wizards. Have some pride. And Alexander Sarr, aren't you supposed to be a defensive big? Do something about it.
I mean, a lot of people are going to complain about it. I'm in the of the boat that I'm not going to complain. I watched most of the fourth quarter. That's when I turned the game on. But from what I could see from the tweets is it's more fault at the Wizards. The Wizards didn't start doubling him until he had 70. Like that, that's like once he has 30 and a quarter, you have to realize like, all right, we need to shut this guy down. Like he had 30 in the first quarter, he had 50 in the first half. Like that's like it's the Wizards' fault for letting him get there. And from watching the game, I don't know if you saw it, but like the Wizards were fouling, like they would inbounds the ball. He would inbounds the ball and try to get it to Bam. And then if Bam didn't get the ball, the Wizards would just immediately foul whoever had the ball to force him to take the shot so that Bam couldn't get shots. But then what would happen is the Heat, right when the Wizards inbound the ball, would foul the Wizards right away and force them to go to the line so that they couldn't drain out the shot clock and waste 20 seconds so they could get the ball back to Bam so he could just get another two free throws. I mean, what he had like 43 free throws or something like that. I saw he broke the record, and I saw the record before was between Adrian Dantley and Wilt Chamberlain, and Adrian Dantley was a rookie in 1976. So I was just like kind of blown away by that we haven't seen this happen in so long. But yeah, I would call it conspiracy theory. I would just blame the Wizards for just not caring and legitimately just allowing Bam to make them a part of history too.
Yeah, I don't think there was a big conspiracy movement out there to make Bam look like one of the greatest scorers of all time.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people make fun of him,
even more known for defense. Yeah, than his offensive game. And so I think it's interesting that he got it. Good for him. I don't understand why the Wizards fouled him like crazy. You know, maybe some of the calls were questionable too, but. Yeah, I agree with you. I think if another player has 40 points in a game, you might have to think about doubling him. You don't need to wait until it gets to be 70, where it's like, you know, I think we're going to be made fun of at the end of this deal. And so I understand you're trying to lose and not win a lot of games, but it'd be tough. I read an article recently about it was a dad bringing his two boys to a Wizards game, and they said they're okay with losing because, you know, they're hoping it's going to lead to more development for the team. They're very excited about Anthony Davis and Trae Young next year and all that stuff. But and they got Alexander Sarr, I think, signed one of their jerseys or something. I'm like, okay, that's all nice. But, like, you still need to have some pride on the court. Like, it's okay if you're going to lose, but you should be embarrassed as a professional if I think that takes place. So, no, I'm with you. I'm not going to mock Bam for doing well. I'm going to mock the Wizards for doing so poorly. And that takes us to our poor performance. Poor-ish. It was poor in one quarter, and that's what cost us. The Suns lose 115 to 122 against the toughest game of the week, the Toronto Raptors. We did have Jalen Green, again, as we talked about. He went off 34 points, hitting 8 three-pointers. Devin Booker chipped in 31 points as well. But the Raptors, it was kind of what I always thought they could be, aggressive, long defensive team, physical team. They got a lot of players to do it. Scotty Barnes had only 14 points. It was really the Brandon Ingram show with 36 points, 7 rebounds. RJ Barrett, though, got in on the act, too, with 22 points. So it was a tough loss. You covered it, right?
Yeah, I broke down the game for Brightside. So I was watching and wrote the game recap for this one. And the beginning and the end were very similar. And then everything in the middle was also the same. The Suns started off this game. It looked like a little jet lagged on defense. Maybe, obviously, coming
out. It's important to know this was a back-to-back.
Yes,
you go from Indiana up to Canada, and then you have to go through customs.
Yep. So not really a great thing for for the Suns here. Excuse me. And it was very telling early on. I believe Brandon Ingram and Jakob Poeltl, which we had Matthias on, who was a great guest, obviously from Austria. Jakob Poeltl being the best player, he said that has come out of there. He even said Jakob Poeltl is not that great, and right. I know Jakob Poeltl is not that great. So if Jakob Poeltl with a bad back, who could have gotten traded for Sabonis, but because of his bad back, didn't get traded, is cooking the Suns in the paint, then we have a problem on our hands, and that was very evident last night. Suns once again outscored in the paint here, 60 to 32. very, very bad. Mark Williams kind of not being here, being a big glaring aspect on the defensive pressure. Like King Nacho was saying, Oso was not great in this game. Oso,
so bad.
I mean, he had some good dunks. Like, K-Ray did give him a boom. Yeah, he got a nice boom, so I'll give it to him. But defensively, yeah, he hasn't been that great. And I think with Oso, again, like he went up against Giannis earlier in the week. He struggles with the guys that are just going to physically impact him, like, and just like barrel through him. And that's why I fear if the Suns play the Nuggets in the playoffs, because I think Jokic will just do scary things to the Suns front court and we will be exposed. But nonetheless, Suns came out a little bit jet lagged, but then Jalen Green started getting it going. And like you mentioned, he had a great game once again, 34 points, 8 for 16 from 3-point range, tied his career high in 3-point makes in this game, and had, I believe, 5 in the first half, which was really, really effective. Also had I don't know if you saw the clip, but a crazy dunk in this game in the third quarter where he absolutely yammed. I don't remember who it was on the Raptors, but he did dunk on someone. That was very, very interesting. Really liked that. Booker, once again, another effective game. Combining for 79 and 65 in back-to-back nights is very, very nice to see from your two guards. But there were some issues as well. Royce didn't really get hot. He did hit two threes, and both threes he did hit were clutch, but couldn't really find the basket early on, and then just couldn't really make anything. And then because Jalen Green and Booker were playing so effectively, the team was playing very stagnant. There was a lot of ball movement throughout some points, but not throughout the entire game. You had some instances where Gillespie was kind of standing there just waiting for opportunities, not creating his own, which in these three-guard lineups could be an issue kind of going into the playoffs. He struggled a little bit this week. He was 0 for 3 in yesterday's game. Didn't really have as many consistent offensive performances as we've seen, but hoping for a bounce back from him. Grayson Allen also had a big game, had 10 free throw attempts and made 8 of them. The Suns were getting to the line a lot this game, and especially early on, they were trading a lot of free throws with the Raptors. But the main thing I want to mention is Rashear Fleming, because I said it at the beginning, he might be trying to push himself into this rotation. Tonight, or last night, was a reason why. 9 points, 3 for 5 from the field, 3 for 3 from 3-point range, hitting catch and shoot clutch threes in the fourth quarter to give the Suns big, big leads. 3 rebounds, but most importantly, 3 blocks, which all 3 of those blocks were mean blocks. They're not just little tops or nothing. He was getting chased down blocks, swats jumping across the basket. He is looking nice. He was even getting some small ball 5 action. I really, really liked it from him. Like you mentioned, the Raptors had Brandon Ingram having 36 points, finding any basket he wants. Scotty Barnes grabbing rebounds. RJ Barrett somehow woke up in the fourth quarter when the Suns fell asleep and couldn't get that scoring drought. And I have to tip my cap to Jacoby Walter, because he was hitting some big threes late, and Sandro Mamukelashvili, because he's my guy and was scoring low in the paint as well. And the Raptors just kind of kept it crawling. I don't know what the exact drought was for the Suns, but outscored 36-23 in the fourth quarter. And I mean, it was a game where the Suns would have an 8-0 run from Jalen Green or an 8-0 run from Devin Booker, and then Brandon Ingram would match that. And it was just every time this lead got to 10 or 12, it could never get closed back down, or it could never get expanded to 15 or 20. It was always closed back down to 5 or 8 or 3, and the Raptors were just hanging in there. And then late, the Suns just couldn't buy a bucket for like 3 or 4 minutes. The Raptors kept making their shots, playing good defense, and as we all saw, the viral clip that went on social media, the block by Scotty Barnes on Jalen Green, that was clearly a foul, by the way, but said by both K-Ray and I apologize, the woman commentator that was alongside K-Ray, it was not Eddie last night, but they both agreed that it was a foul. Everyone on Twitter was saying it was a foul on Legion Hoops post, so yeah, gross thing to post, but yeah. Suns could have won that game, should have won that game. Fans definitely overreacted more on Twitter than they should have. But nonetheless, still some intriguing parts in the win, that in the loss, excuse me, that you can definitely be happy about with Jalen Green and Rashear Fleming.
Mm-hmm. How do you pronounce that player for the Raptors?
Sandro Mamukelashvili.
See, I thought you said about 3 different guys right there.
But shout out to him for going to Seton Hall, or else I would not know how to probably pronounce his last name. But I, one funny thing is, I was looking on my camera roll the other day, and I have a picture of Sandro getting drafted, and it's actually a video of him getting drafted when his name came up on the clock. And guess who is talking on the screen when he got drafted? Jalen Green.
Oh, really?
So I was like, no way. I was like, my son and my favorite Seton Hall guy right there in the same video. Two worlds meeting. That's kind of funny.
I will point out that somebody who on the Raptors who didn't play, that I remember, speaking of college ball, this guy, they were talking about being a much higher pick. Grady Dick did not play. Coach's decision. I don't know what's going on up there in Toronto, but because I haven't been watching them too much, but Grady Dick's kind of is he just a shooter that sometimes gets to play anymore?
Yeah, I mean, from my knowledge too, I don't really watch too many Raptors games. He was a shooter. I remember his rookie year, he wasn't that great playing the G League, and then kind of had like a second half, maybe it was Mickey Mouse March kind of run, and then he kind of got some PT. I think he was like on the trade block. They were trying to look to move off of him. I wouldn't be shocked. I think they just have too much offense in their guard system. They don't have a lot of defensive guards because it's just like him and Quickly, and they have to play those other guys, and he's just not an effective defender, and the Raptors kind of preach that defensive intensity. Also, DNP in this game as well, but on the Sun side was Ryan Dunn. So we talked about Rashear Fleming, obviously, earlier, kind of getting some of those minutes. He even played some small ball five last night, looking really, really effective in there without Mark Williams, getting more minutes at that. Ryan Dunn, though, seeing no minutes with Rashear Fleming and Milowatch getting those. And Rashear got to start the fourth quarter with the team. So getting even more and more trust with Jordan Ott.
Milowatch only got a few minutes in this game, which I thought was interesting. I mean, maybe that reveals a little bit of his limitations.
I think it's the physicality and the size of the Raptors. That they're just like – They play
three power forwards, basically.
Yes.
They're fast. They're not overly huge, but they're I'm actually surprised they have not played better than they have. But because I was bought into their approach last year, but they kind of went to tank mode a little bit as well. Because I think Brandon Ingram, they let him have like 2 months for a sprained ankle. I'm like, oh, that's the weakest ankle I've ever heard of. Nacho. Not happy with the Oso game in this one. I feel like Nacho's an easy guy to let down. Oso will have like a great month and just show all this development. And it's like 1 of 6 from the free throw line. Get out of here, Oso. We don't need you anymore. And so, I feel like, where's the loyalty at, Nacho? Let's see. Let me ask you real quick, because you mentioned the Warriors, and we are in a tight Western Conference standings now, and we're approaching our final 15 games. It feels like the season went by fast. Hey, time flies when you're having fun and the team's actually good. Huh? Right now, let me pull up the Western Conference. If the playoffs were today, the Suns would be the 7th seed, and we are 2 games back at the moment from the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are the 6th seed. But as you had pointed out, we are 3 games back from the third place. So we could move pretty easily. I don't expect we're not going to fall out of the play-in tournament or anything like that. I mean, the below us, Portland Trail Blazers, 32-35, they're 20 games back, so 7 games behind us. I don't think we're going to, we're definitely better than the team was last year that couldn't even make the play-in tournament. So that, it shows the improvement right there. But with 15 games left, I'm going to ask you your prediction. But real quick, because it seems like it's been talked about a lot lately, and I want to get your take on it, because you mentioned Steve Kerr or Steph Curry being out, and the Warriors, and they're in the hunt as well. Steve Kerr was talking once again about how the league, they need to play less games. And I find that fascinating. I think Steve Kerr is the ultimate, company guy. Like, he knows how old Draymond is, how old Steph Curry is. He probably thinks his window is just about completely closed for trying to win titles with this franchise. But he played in the 90s. He knows how long a season has been. It's been 82 for a while. And these people talking about shortening the regular season, I get the idea behind it, but Jordan averaged over 38 minutes a game. Most of these guys are like 30 to 35, and they're upset because they need to hit, is it 65 games?
Mm-hmm.
65 games to be on the all-NBA teams. Jordan was averaging like 77 or something like that. I mean, if you take out the season that he missed because of injury, it was like almost always like seven, like maybe missed five games. And in those games that he was playing, he barely took a break. And he had a very long career. And I hate to sound like an old basketball head or something like that, but like Eddie Johnson was talking about this on NBA radio too. He's like, you guys have chefs, you have private jets, you have like massage physical therapists, like your soft tissue muscles should be able to recover in this kind of stuff. So I'm curious, one, do you think they should shorten the regular season? Clearly, you can already tell I don't think we should do that. If you want to remove back-to-backs, okay, I get that. Just, you know, spread it out a little bit more if that's something we can do. But yeah, what are your takes otherwise?
I'm not the biggest fan of shortening the season, but I understand why it has its pros, but obviously it has its cons as well. I think that the records would be off. Like, it's just going to be a lot harder. You're going to have to view everything in a different lens. I agree with you that the back-to-back should be kind of taken kind of out, and I don't really care if that maybe extends the seasons a little bit by an extra week or two just because of that. That's totally fine by me. That's kind of funny that Steve Kerr, out of all people, like you said, is mentioning that,
right?
Because obviously he has his older team and he played in the NBA. So like, he played 82 games, and Eddie Johnson, I believe I saw even tweeted about this saying that he had his best season when he played 82 games or something like that. So he doesn't even know what Steve Kerr is talking about. So that was kind of funny to see. But yeah, for me personally, I don't necessarily think that it's the worst thing, but I definitely think there could be other solutions kind of to go around that. And then when looking at the playoffs here, you mentioned the Suns are definitely locked into the play-in at least, which is good to see. They are 15 and a half games.
Sorry, let me ask you real quick, though, before we go into that, because I was also listening to, on ESPN, because it was a big talk this last week. Mm-hmm. And they were discussing, one of the analysts was saying, well, this is a much more athletic league than it was in the Jordan era and the Kobe era. We have more like freakish athletes, and they're faster and they run more. And the Suns run and gun era would actually be one of the slowest teams today, as we've heard before. But as the other guy counterpointed, he goes, there's no hand checking. There were bigger guys before, and they would drop you onto your back, and it would just be two free throws. No technical, and kick that guy out of the court. Like they used to, they said it was more like playing fullbacks, you know. And so what do you think? I don't know. I'm sure there's a million different theories out there, but why do you think, you know, I'll put it this way. I think there's just a lot of these guys are like, hey, I'm getting the max I can get salary wise. The next best thing is for me just to like skip some days, like take PTO. I'm going to rest this game. It's not like that their bodies can't handle it, because they have more support than guys had before as well. But I don't know. Do you think that, is there something that we're seeing that maybe wasn't there before that is causing so many of these guys to just not be able to play?
Because like you mentioned the physicality. I don't think it's the physicality. I think it's more maybe the pace of play that could maybe do it, because mm-hmm. I do think that maybe now, obviously, it's been faster and the three-point shot has been more institutionalized, that can kind of obviously spread out an offense more, but it could mm-hmm. also lead into opportunities where players could get hurt, because say you're just playing a five out offense and someone goes to drive and two people rotate and someone runs into someone, maybe their knees collide or something like that. Like, I don't necessarily know. I don't think it's more the physicality, but more the pace as well, just because they are playing so fast, they are moving so quickly. And like, you look at players like Russell Westbrook or De'Aaron Fox, like, I know that there were fast players in the NBA beforehand, but like, just those like downhill attackers, even Jalen Green on the Suns, like, they're moving so quickly to get to the basket and to get those slams. Like, you have to wonder, like, maybe at some point with that like freak athleticism and going so quickly, like, if that collision is altered due to how fast they're moving too. So I don't know. I'd say pace of play is probably more effective than physicality, though, because I can't really. Every NBA is physical, and I think the older you get back, like you said, it is more physical, so you can't use that as an outlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not seeing too many of these guys slow down and then go, all right, let's do back to the basket, low post, mm-hmm. back down, and do a baby hook shot where everybody else can sit there and go, okay.
Exactly.
That's okay, go sprint back down the court again. So, all right, playoffs, positioning. I think the Suns got to try and reach and get obviously everything they can. This is going to be a tough playoff regardless. But what do you think we're going to be able to accomplish?
I think the highest we can get is 6. I feel like I'm pretty confident in saying that.
You, not 3?
No. I'm sorry. I don't think so. I do know that
though, would it be though.
It would be amazing. I won't lie. It would be very, very cool to see the Suns up there. Maybe 5 I could convince myself because like when I look at these teams, when I look at the 3 through 6, I see one
the Rockets, outlying Lakers, team. Nuggets, Timberwolves.
I see one outlying team, and it's the Lakers. And I know they have Luka. I know they have LeBron. But in a 7-game playoff series with how atrocious their defense is and how weird their shooting is, there's no way in hell they're going to be able to sustain any of these teams. There's just no way. It's just not possible. They're not going to be able to match up with the Timberwolves in size. They're not going to be able to match up with the Nuggets in size. The Rockets' wing depth and their size is going to expose them. They play the Spurs. Wemby is going to dominate DeAndre Ayton. And if they play the Thunder, we all know how that's going to go out, right? They might be able to match up with them a little bit better.
Yay, the X factor.
Yeah, it's just not going to go good. I could say the similar thing for the Suns, but I do think with their culture and identity, like I mentioned earlier, something that the Lakers don't really have institutionalized, not that J.J. Redick's a great coach, but just kind of the grouping of their players, having a disgruntled LeBron James who wants to run the team, and Luka Doncic and DeAndre Ayton, all these personalities. I don't think you can really effectively build that culture with the Lakers there. So for the Suns, I think they have a better chance there. But I think that a lot of people have been kind of writing off this team. I've seen a lot of people have been talking about the playoffs and talk about the Clippers and on their really good run and how they've been good in the second half with getting Darius Garland and adding Benedict Mathurin and Kawhi's having this great season, obviously. But, like, I don't think we should be talking about the Clippers potentially passing the Suns, right? Like, they're still
four and a half games back. We're closer to the third seed than we are to the eighth seed, and we're currently 7.
Exactly. I think just a lot of people are writing off the Suns. They're kind of this like Cinderella story kind of compared to the Pacers last year where they're just really, really good and they have a fun, good unit. So people are like, oh, yeah, this team with Anthony Edwards, yeah, they'll win. Oh, this team with LeBron James and Luka Doncic, how could they lose to Jordan Ott, first-year head coach, and Jalen Green? They got Mark Williams who barely plays. Oh, my God. But, yeah. That's why they work for ESPN.
I love your impression of these other fans. No, I think we're going to be a tough out regardless, but I don't think we're going to go. I would be so happy if we do. I think it'll be next to impossible to get out of the second round right now. And I mentioned in our kind of group chat of Suns podcasting, this team needs to be fully healthy to be competitive. And yes, that's true for a lot of teams, but I think that it's very true for this team in the sense that if we miss a Brooks or a Booker, then we're out. Whereas I think like the Lakers could miss a LeBron and maybe if they're matched up against the Clippers, they could still win the series. I think if we lose somebody like a Brooks or Booker, it immediately makes any matchup riskier. So I think we're not top heavy. But our ceiling is lower. We don't have a lot of room for error. I know we got to wrap and we're already a little past our time. So I want to let the Planeteers enjoy their freezing cold or super hot Saturday, wherever they are in the world. Let me announce the kind of cool news, especially I know Nacho will be interested to hear this. Kevin is expected next week, and I'm going to give him a ton of crap if he doesn't show up. We are going to be doing a different time next Saturday because we are doing a semi-megapod with those lovely gentlemen from all the way from Australia and Singapore for Nate. And in addition, we got the Suns Geek stopping by. So we're going to have an Aussie Suns fan, Sun Geek, Suns Planeteers, Saturday night stateside time next week. So Don't feel like you got to get up early and join us for a 9 a.m. or Arizona time, folks. We will catch you later on in the evening. I know you're actually going to be paying attention to one of the games for Brightside. Is that right?
Yeah, the Suns are actually taking – it's, you said it's next Saturday, correct?
That's right.
So, Bucks. It was the Bucks, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh.
9 o'clock at night, Central. Ooh.
Yes, so – yeah, they are taking on the Bucks. Actually, I think I misread that. So maybe I'm not covering the game. I thought it. Okay, I thought it was. So I thought it was the Jazz game. So
freedom.
Maybe
yeah.
So I might have some freedom, which would be nice. But I'll definitely be there regardless. Even if I don't have the freedom, I just might not be talking as much. But I'll definitely be well, there.
Don't worry, with the with the three Aussies, the geek, and the three of us, I'm sure there's we'll have to go from trying to fill a full hour with just the two of us to being like, all right, wait, did you speak for your 8 minutes yet? it'll be like an all-star game appearance. Well, let me ask you real quick too, two quick things. One, when you do cover a game and the content that you create, do you like to snipe other people's content and tweet it out yourself and give zero credit, or are you kind of somebody that doesn't like to do that?
I don't like to do that, and you can look at my Twitter because I did exactly the opposite last night and cited the person when I did tweet out a video from them and gave them credit, and I was rewarded by doing that by getting a repost. So I think that my work was absolutely well-deserving in that, so I'm very happy that that happened.
It's are these guys doing are they just like screen recording other people's video clips? Because I've noticed that reporters will go and interview a player, and then somebody will take that exact clip, not retweet the person that actually recorded the interview or did the photography. They're not at the game. They just found it, clipped the whole video out, and said, this is what just happened.
That's my guess. That'd be the only way I could do it is because I've done it before for for the Oso clip, for example. Mm-hmm. I screen recorded that, so you just do it pretty easily and you can delete
But
then you can also delete the start and the end too, so it makes it look like your own. Like, you can make it look official. Right. I don't even know, I'm pretty sure you can only do the embed feature on the laptop. Like, you know how if you post a video, you can embed the person? I'm pretty sure you can only do that on the laptop. And most of the time I'm tweeting from my phone. So half the time I don't even know how to use that option. So the only way I would know how to is just, put the person's name in the tweet and give them credit. But
don't let Suns fans get away with that kind of stuff. That is Bush League. Call those people out. That is they're stealing other people's content. Exactly. Not that it happens to us directly too often, but we've noticed some of our around the franchise they deserve the credit. They're the ones putting in the work getting
exactly.
there. And also, my other question, sir. I mean, you're in Boston. You guys have to have one killer St. Patty's Day coming up, right? Do you make the whole bay green?
We're not like Chicago, but I can tell you.
You just dump tea into the ocean.
Huh? Yeah. I can tell you.
Weird about it.
That Boston or Massachusetts is primarily Italian and Irish, where the Italians are in the northern part, where I kind of am, or north of Boston. And then the Irish are the south of Boston. That's why they're from Southie, and that's why when you see the criminal mob movies or Whitey Bulger from Southie,
or Bill Burr,
But Southie has a parade every year for St. Patrick's Day to honor the heritage. I have gone multiple times. Let's just say I have gone inebriated and have had some great times. I've walked in the parade before. Last time I went at the end of the parade.
Sounds like a New Orleans thing. Next thing I know, I find myself in the parade.
Yeah, there were the barriers. We were the parade had ended, and they were picking up the barriers, and me and my friends were oh, screw it, we'll just walk into the parade. So we just walked in, and then started. One of my friends has a video of us walking the parade screaming, and people are giving us handshakes, and then we walked for 5 minutes, and then some cops were hey, what are you guys doing? We're oh, we were looking for an exit. We're just trying to get out. They're yeah, jump over this thing. We're all right. We jumped over the barrier. We just lied to them. Yeah, whatever. But that was super fun. But it has historically been known to be run over by high schoolers. And as you all know, the high schoolers get inebriated, have a lot of fun at the parade, but it results in a lot of fighting, a lot of cops making kids pour out drinks, yada yada yada. So they
pour
have
out your Gatorades right now.
Yeah. So they have now made two alternate routes where there's a family zone area for the parade where parents are going to take their kids and family, so they don't have to deal
having
with
a toddler. I appreciate the option
because let's just say last time I saw someone get hit with a Stanley Cup across the face in a fight. Yeah.
Ouch. Okay.
But that's what the Boston people are doing. The Irish people are definitely, definitely enjoying their St. Patrick's Day on Tuesday. But they'll enjoy their parade tomorrow. And I don't know off the top of my head. I want to check this real quick. The Celtics do have the day off. They won't be in Boston because they'll be traveling to Golden State. But maybe they'll be celebrating St. Patty's Day in Golden State. They did go to a movie in Oklahoma, so we'll have to wait and see.
I love that you know their like social schedule.
It's I saw
the day off and he's golfing tomorrow, and you're like, so they saw a movie in Oklahoma. There might be cinema'd out, so that maybe they'll go out for Guinness when they hit the golf course Gold Coast. No, I love it. Well, I sir, you know, I'm a former bartender, so. I'm a bit of a nerd on certain things like that. So we have Guinness in the fridge. We have Harp in the fridge. We have Smittix in the fridge. And we also have Jameson. And we have Green Spot. We have Yellow Spot. We have Redbreast 12. And we have Powers Irish Whiskey as well. So we are – I'm Irish but my wife and her Venezuelan family are not, but they, believe it or not, they just love the festivities that the Americans have decided is the most Irish thing about the holiday. So, they will be, enjoying all the beverages that will be poured. I will throw on Boondock Saints, at some point, after I've had a few beers. My buddy told me, that there's a fantastic movie out there, and I know you're definitely going to watch it because you always say you're going to watch a movie, and then you never do. Let's see, where was it? Oh, there it is. He said, check out Hunger by Steve McQueen if you want to learn a little bit about the Irish Troubles and what was taking place in that era. So I hope to get that probably when I'm more sipping the whiskey as opposed to throwing it back fast. So until next week, Planeteers. Oh, what? No, how about we tell everybody where they can find us? You can find me at Fallen Founder. I don't have the big resume. That's this guy. That's the Pacers, Celtics, Suns guy. Bruce, hit him with it.
Yep. You can find me at YouTube at Swish City. You can find me on Twitter here talking about the Suns and Pacers. Now, a little some Pacers. Not really much Pacers. There's more Suns, but I got to show the Pacers some love there. So I got to do some more on that. And then my writing, 8 points, 9 seconds for the Pacers, Bright Side of the Sun for the Suns. And then big announcement before I leave, Jake, which I want to say thank you to everyone who has been here and shown support to allow me to get this opportunity, is that on Monday, I will be attending the game at TD Garden, reporting live, boots on the ground, for Bright Side of the Sun, for the Suns. So I will be posting on Twitter, giving videos, obviously credit to the people that do ask questions in my videos, but I think I'll have the opportunity to be able to ask Jordan Ott some questions, ask Joe Mazzulla some questions. I don't necessarily know if I have locker room access. I don't know. But if I do get the locker room access with potentially Dwayne and Amanda and John Bloom, then who knows? I could potentially have some of that as well. So definitely stay tuned to Bright Side of the Sun's Twitter on Monday night, because I'm sure John will be reposting some things, or even my Twitter, to see some action on the Suns game. Because for me, it's going to be very, very fun to get that experience for the first time, even though I definitely will be a little bit nervous.
Talk about things we haven't done yet. Celtics, Timberwolves, Spurs, Bucks, or excuse me, we'll touch on the Bucks when we're recording next. So I'll just say Celtics, Timberwolves, Spurs. I'm going to say 1-2. Your quick snap prediction.
1-2 as well.
1-2. Now let me ask you this. Are you going to go in there and try and make a name for yourself as the Boston-located Phoenix Suns reporter? And are you going to ask like a unique question? I always think about this kind of stuff. Like if I had that opportunity, would I be like, you know, this happens a lot. How do you approach that to try and give them like a curveball question? Because a lot of it's like, so you guys played pretty hard tonight. How do you feel? And it's like kind of the generic, like, all right, thanks for answering my questions. How are you going to approach it? You going to try and give them something unique?
Yeah. I know that in the Suns-Celtics game last time they played, they allowed a lot of offensive rebounds, and Baylor Scheinman was one of those guys who was getting a lot of those. So, and the Suns are actually a pretty good offensive rebounding team themselves. I think they're top five or something. Boston is also in there. So, like, I want to touch something on that. I did ask my friends if I do get to talk to Joe what question I should ask them, and they said that I should definitely ask him a curveball question because he'd definitely appreciate that more. Like, I came up with, like, you, a Tiger, Jalen, and Jason in an arena, who wins or something like that, like who has the biggest fight, or asking about like motivation or something, because I know he's big on that. But I definitely want to know,
hey, what's the best way for you to celebrate St. Patrick's Day? Because it would be the day before.
That is true. That is true.
I always like that when they like the football time, they'll be like, what are the sides you need for Thanksgiving? And you always find out like rent, be like, oh, I got to have this, like smoked oysters. And it's like, wait, what? What is, okay, you learn a little bit. And then again, I wrote the soups article for Brightside on which player would be what soup. But no, go ahead.
If I do get to talk to Colin or Oso, though, I 100% will ask them about the Big East. That is a, like, if I get the option to talk to one of them, I will 100%, because Colin played at Nova, Oso played at Marquette, and both of them were, have been kind of working on their duo a little bit. I don't know if you saw this week, but I think it was this week. I can't remember what game, but Oso had a nice, like, behind the back pass to Colin Gillespie into like a nice little three that they ran at the top of the key. Like they've had some really great chemistry this year. So definitely want to kind of clue in on them. And then, you know, my guy, Jamari Bouye, if I get the opportunity to ask him, I'd rather talk to, I mean, as much as I'd love to talk to Brooks or Booker or Jalen Green, I'd rather talk to the kind of not underappreciated or undervalued, but the underdog guys on the Suns, guys that are fighting for those opportunities, and the guys that have kind of like had to claw up with these expectations. Because as someone that's a little bit smaller in the media field as well, I kind of see myself as them on the team and representing that. So I think it'd be cool to get to talk to them.
I love it. Well, I think we'll all be looking forward to seeing what you report on, and go in there with some confidence on those questions and have some fun with it. We'll be tuning in, and Planeteers, check us out. Us Aussie Suns fans podcast, Suns Geek, Suns Planet, next Saturday. We'll catch you then.
Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, stay with us as the Suns get set to shine here on their home court.
Here's Perry, the guard heard. Here's the jump shot. Good! It's good!
Al McCoy with you courtside.
Pumped up a three.
Suzanne! He ties it.
Here's Cameron Payne out on top. Durant, three-pointer straight away.
I just want to take this opportunity to thank everyone in this arena this afternoon, to all of those that are watching and listening on radio and TV. A thank you for allowing me to tell the story of the Suns for 51 great years.
That pretty much wraps things up here. And for one last time, this is Al McCoy saying thanks for being there. Thanks for being with us tonight. And from the Footprint Center here in downtown Phoenix, we'll just say so long for now.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.